the Build House.
And you are listening to 94.1 KPFA in Berkeley, 89.3 KPFB in Berkeley, 88.1 KFCF in Fresno, and online at kpfa.org. The time is 2 p.m. Up next, the Visionary Activist Show.
Welcome, allies, to the Visionary Activist Show, and I'm your weaver of context, Caroline Casey. So we have three splendid guests in the KPFA studios we are dedicating to water this hour. But first, before I introduce their splendiferousness, a little weaving of context. You know, a tip of the hat to one of my favorite humans ever, Terry Pratchett, who died this morning in London with his cat sleeping on his bed and surrounded by family. But the medicine that I've always loved from Terry Pratchett is a jaunty jocularity, you know, inspiring my own off-quipping myself, this situation so dire we can't afford the luxury of realism. His last tweet is, you know, Terry took death's arm and followed him through the doors and on into the black desert under the endless night, the end. But there's so many crucial things that I've quoted through the years from Terry Pratchett. His wonderful witch character, Tiffany Aiken, in the incredibly pertinent forever book, I Shall Wear Midnight, about how do we compost, you know, human irreverence and, you know, mob mind. But Tiffany, at the beginning of the book, she's helping the old patriarch to die, as we are helping the old world, in a sense, to die. And she says, balance. The first thing she learned in witchcraft was all about balance, how to let the pain flow through you, not into you. The center of the seesaw is neither up nor down, but upness and downness flow through it. So in his incredibly prolific 70 novels, oh my goodness, so many great ones. But another great character, Granny Weatherwax, and again, this is for all of us, team. You know, when somebody says she wants to do something good, something bold, she wants to save water in the world, and people go, you can't do that. There's a million to one chances against you. And she says, million to one chances crop up 9 times out of 10 when your heart is dedicated. And we go, so, again, thank you so much, Terry Pratchett, for all of that goodness that we carry with us, you know, in perpetuity. So I'm getting ready to head out in so many ways on the Equinox tour. But first, on Monday, March 16th, Daniel Gemario and I will be having a teleconference. It is by phone, web, or audio Skype. We are opening the doors of our Trickster Council to all beings at 6 p.m. Pacific time. You can find out about that at, you know, Coyote Network News. Again, it's the 7th of 7 Uranus-Pluto squares that will happen during the call. And the gist of that for all of us is that humans be willing to humbly cooperate with nature's guiding evolutionary genius, also known as Trickster. Next week, I will be hosting wonderful Robert Scribbler, one of the best blogs around, one of the most reliable narrators on catastrophic climate change. We will also be dedicating to water. He has so much to say. Encourage you to Google or whatever search engine you use, Robert Scribbler blog on climate change. March 20th, Open Secret in San Rafael, sagacuating with troubadour bard David Lynn Grimes. It is a solar eclipse in Pisces, the realm of the sea and water. We're going to get there right before the vernal equinox. It is so powerful. That's Open Secret, March 20th, San Rafael, sagacuating with troubadour bard David Lynn Grimes. Reservations are encouraged because it will be a packed house in a good way. March 21st, I'll be in Bolinas at Commonweal, the new school, doing a short talk sort of a 20, 30-minute talk and then an interview with Michael Lerner. That is free to all beings, and it's also going to be freely webcast. March 26th, there's a secret Tea Party Council with Mary Waldner. You can, message me if you want to know more about that. March 28th and 29th, I will be in Santa Cruz, 7 p.m. March 28th, again with David Lynn Grimes and many local musicians in our cahooting. We are calling all those willing to be agents of the compassionate trickster redeemer at this time of dire beauty. We are magnetizing the return of Harmonia. Remember, Mars and Venus had a daughter, Harmonia, via pragmatic mysticism, democratic animism, applied divination, and more. All of those things you can find out more at coyotenetworknews.com. Now, then, more than perfectly dedicating to water, we are hosting two of the organizers of Bless the Lake World Water Day, March 22nd, Armando Davila and Amalia Karras, unifyoakland.com. Welcome, Armando.
Hi, Caroline. Thanks for having us.
And a pleasure, and welcome, Amalia.
Hi, Caroline. It's Amalia.
Amalia. I spelled it out even. Amalia. I apologize. I spelled it out, and even spelling it out, I got it wrong. Amalia, how beautiful. And also joining them in KPFA studios is longtime ally, just back from Baja and the gray whales, ambassador from the ocean itself, Michael Stocker. Hey, Michael.
Hey, Caroline. What a delight to be in the voice dance again with you.
That's good. So we want to replace human disrespect with informed, reverent, dedicated, honoring in perpetuity. Armando and Amalia.
Yes.
Okay, Armando and Amalia, do you want to guide us into, again, the March 22nd event and how it connects with so many things going on in the world? I think in Singapore, 400,000 people are participating at 3 p.m. local time everywhere in the world, March 22nd. Armando and Amalia, please guide us into that event, and off we go.
Of course, yeah. So World Water Day started as a United Nations initiative to raise awareness around water issues. And a wonderful organization called unify.org, everyone listening can check them out, they created a global campaign to invite people to pray for the healing of water and to gather to practice meditation. And so the intention of the event is to kind of further this emergent global culture of synchronized meditation in the Bay Area. So the idea is we'll be gathering to raise awareness around local and statewide water issues, particularly featuring the ecology of Lake Merritt, where our water comes from here in the East Bay, and issues about fracking. And then there will be a ceremony to honor the lake, some live music, some hip-hop, some African music, some kids programming from Pacha's Pajamas, and then we'll have the meditation where we in Oakland will synchronize with people all over the world who will be sitting in meditation and praying for water with the intention, the understanding that our prayers and our meditation has a subtle power to create peace in that moment. So it's a peacemaking strategy that doesn't seek to solve all the answers, but to affirm our interdependence with each other worldwide. And, yeah.
Yeah, and Oakland is being highlighted on Unify's whole global webcast as one of three of the 600 different organizers, along with the Ganges in India and Los Angeles, and Oakland's going to be center stage. So we'll be sending live feed from the event so people online can watch it if you go to unify.org on March 22nd.
Yeah, and we do. We want to know all the difficult things. You know, Wendell Berry says, be joyful even though you have considered all the facts. When I was at a crucial science gathering of all the world's great water engineers some years back, the morning was for problems, the afternoon was for solutions. And it is dire, and we do want to know all of that, again, critique and solution, and I guess apologies to water, too. But the engineers from India said, at this rate, and this was some years ago, and everything's speeding up, as we know, six times faster, the melting of the Arctic ice sheets, than the worst-case scenario. But those engineers from India said, it is plausible, if we don't change our direction, that the Ganges will stop running. And that will make war look like a picnic, they said. You know, and we go, with Humble going, we are really sorry, water. We are really sorry, water. But, Michael, you're just back from the gray whales in Baja. I've been twice, once with you and once, you know, coinciding with you, and I want to go again. What do the whales have to say about humans and water, Michael Stocker?
Oh, we were down in the gray whales, and also 2 days ago we're out with about a dozen blue whales, which are the largest critter that's ever inhabited this planet. They seem fairly unmoved, but the gray whales are very playful. We had an unbelievable amount of playtime with, in fact, we had one mama whale who was sad to see us leave, and she started chasing us, and because we have a limited time to be out in the water, but she was rolling around and, you know, scratching her head, and we were scratching her baleen, and she was smiling, had this amazing kind of, it's kind of a laughing smile when they open their mouths, and they have this beautiful white baleen and on the top of their jaws, and they're having fun. You know, I don't know. You know, there were gray whales being killed in their living memory. 1948 was really kind of when they closed down that industry, because there was only 2,000 Western or Eastern Pacific gray whales remaining. They have now popped up. There is anywhere between 18 and 26,000. Perhaps more. It's hard to count these large animals, but they seem to have a lot of magnanimity. They have, either don't have a need in their emotional repertoire to have anger and spite that's long-lasting. They are playful, and the mamas and the babies just, forgiving is something that comes to mind as a human trait, but I don't know if they would necessarily have a word for forgiveness in whale language. It's just probably...
I think we might want to bring this into play, you know, or going, oh, please. I like, you know, redefining forgive as to mean to give energy for change. Like, oh, humans, we've been so rude as a species. There is that. And then our next week's guest, Robert Scribbler, who knows so much, and again, about the dire state of water, as do our guests undoubtedly. He said if we were to translate our scientific knowledge into the language of the ancients, we would say now that water, a spirit that is able to hold the greatest heat of any of the elements, has been made angry by our excess, and it is now moving about in our world with increasing fury. I don't know that I animate nature that way, although, all metaphors are welcome. But this idea of, Amalia and Armando, this is the beginning. I mean, it's not just, you know, people show up and it's a jolly day and, mm-hmm. you know, prayers, may you be well and whatever. And that's it. It's the beginning of a year, right?
Mm-hmm.
Armando?
Yeah. I mean, the invitation, of course, is to be in right relationship with nature. And so we're hoping that this gathering will be basically a really large invitation for everyone present at the gathering and to recognize the necessity of us having joy in this time of dire beauty and to act on behalf of kind of an open future. I mean, the future is yet to be written, even though the conditions are as they are. And so, but, you know, people have a hard time coming to terms with the state of the world. So the meditation and the kind of the tone of the event will be inviting people to, like, ease into what they already know to be true, and then to unify with everyone else, knowing that they're not alone in enacting this transformation of our world.
Yeah, I think that people in Oakland from, you know, I spent 8 years living in India, and much of that I dealt with water issues on a daily basis and waterborne illness myself. And when I came back, I was just so aware of how Americans are using water without any idea of where it comes from, or that there's any lack of it, or that we have any problems. And here we are in the worst drought in history, and nothing's changed. People still take 10-minute showers. They still leave the faucets on when they're washing the dishes and walk away from it. And it just seems like a constant thing in my face when I see how water is being wasted and abused and used. And, you know, we don't all know where our water comes from here, and we don't know what the issues are or what we can do. And so this event is really aimed to educate the local residents here of what they can do and how we can protect Lake Merritt. Lake Merritt was the first wildlife refuge, I believe, in the U.S. or in the world. I think it was in the 1800s. And it's just such a beautiful place. There's a bird sanctuary there, and there's a lot of issues with our lake that most people who walk around it every day aren't aware of, and they're not aware of how they're contributing to it or how they can protect it. And so we hope that the education piece of the day and just all of us coming together with this one thing that we all love in Oakland is our lake. Like, we can all agree that we love our lake. We might not agree on politics, we might not agree on other things, but that is one thing that we all agree on, and to just allow that beauty and to protect this resource, maybe we can heal other things in the process of doing that.
So it is Bless the Lake, a World Water Day event, Sunday, March 22nd. It's 3:30 to 6:30, is that right?
That's right.
Mm-hmm. Oh, okay. Everybody else in the world is gathering at 3, but Oakland's its own quirky self going, all right, 3:30 in Oakland, 3 p.m. everywhere else in the world.
That's right. That's
at
right.
The Lake Merritt Amphitheater. Say what?
I was just agreeing with you. Yeah, we like to keep ourselves
okay. Oakland says, everybody else at 3, we're at 3:30 because, you know, we stayed up late. Okay, a day to celebrate, learn, yes, honor, water is sacred, global synchronization, meditation for healing. And as Amalia said, you know, Oakland is one of 3 out of 600 happening worldwide featured on unify.org's webcast. And you can go to, again, www.unifyoakland.com for more of that. So we go, all right, but it is beginning a year. And yeah, it is the drought. It is again, you know, 3-decade mega drought forecast for Southwest. Severe drying by mid-century. That's meaning it's getting worse. And we go, alrighty. So Michael, again, you said the all water. I mean, it's all. There's only water, and it is. Remind us how precious and rare and how small the amount really is on this planet.
Well, you know, I do a lot of work in the ocean, and the ocean is covers almost 3/4 of the surface of the Earth, and it is an average depth of between 8 and 12 miles. There's actually a lot of water in that. A number of years ago, the National Science Foundation said that there is no plural for ocean. It's just one thing. And, you know, extending that a little further is that there is really only one body of water on this planet, and we're in it. Just from you know, the little sweat perspiration that comes off our bodies into the air and off the surface of the Lake Merritt and kind of runs down from there into the bay. And it's all connected that way. But, you know, that 8 to 12 miles deep, you think is an awful lot. It seems really big, but if you took a pencil and drew a circle that was 3 feet in diameter, the pencil line would be about as deep as the ocean is relative to the rather large diameter of this thing you've just drawn. So, you know, the fact that it seems large has always been, when you get out there, humbling, and people have not treated it well. The ocean particularly, but any body of water, any rivers, and people are treating water like teenagers, you know, leaving our clothes on the floor and throwing the cigarette butts on the train. And, you know, at some point in time, it's interesting, but, you know, mom's going to kick us out. We can't continue to do this. The fracking thing.
Fracking. That's a do put a little start there. Come back to that.
Yeah.
But also, when did humans first, you know, put waste and human waste into water? When did that happen? It's pretty old, actually.
Yeah, it is pretty. But, you know, in terms of actually the Western canon, how water was dealt with, it for all the great concepts that Saint Bernard of Clairvaux came up with in terms of companionability and civil behavior amongst his amongst his flocks, if you will, he also came up with this rather lousy idea of putting his monasteries and abbeys above running water, and they would excrete, and, you know, their human waste would go in the water. And he talked about how water was a purifier, and it would purify, and only so much, you know, downstream it would be pure again. And, you know, I actually heard that idea in the 60s, that it was very tenacious, that you could throw any garbage in water and it would purify itself. It's a rather closed-minded concept. And, you know, what ended up happening, that was probably in about 1190 in the Western kind of date system. In terms of how, because I understand that, you know, the Ganges is a river they float bodies on. Is that waste? It's something, I mean, Amalia talked about having, you know, probably her own personal amoeba that came out of that water because they haven't treated it. They've cleaned it as, as a purifier, as a cleanser.
And also when I was in Varanasi, the water intake for the city was downstream from the sewage dumping. We go, oh, that's perfect. The British put that in that way. you know, we'd been told again, you know, not to drink the water, but we were having bong lassis every day, and so we realized we had been drinking the water. But we didn't, because of the power of prayer. I mean, due to some miracle, you know, you never know. We actually didn't get sick. Thank you, bong lassis. Maybe it was the medical aspect of that really helped. But I do want us to bring, you know, feel free, everybody, to chime in. Let me stir up a little bit, because we do want to go fracking and the educational aspect of, again, the late merit gathering and also our gathering in perpetuity and things we got to know. You know, and so let me just also introduce, you know, Neptune. Neptune dreams, vision, water, how a culture tells itself its own story as intimately related to water. You know, we say human imagination, for as far as we have memory, has been tied to the sea, to the ocean. And it says, you know, what kind of species would poison the collective water supply? And Neptune would say a species that had lost its mythos of conscious kinship, mm-hmm. and only an imagination, and only a healing of imagination can allow us to heal the water, and only the healing of water can allow us to heal our imagination. So it's inextricably intertwined. But for now, right now, today, and all around now, and over the gathering, around the world at Lake Merritt and everywhere, Neptune right now, first time in 165 years, is in its home realm of Pisces, the water, the sea, the ocean. Its degree, each degree has a symbol. Right now, we can all kind of do this in our mind's eye. It's a woman with a bugle calling in a new tide of cultural energy. So it's like, yes, we are willing to collaborate with water. And I just wanted to kind of bring that in, you know, let all natural facts be social strategy metaphors. So how do we become like water and water strategy? And, you know, for years, you know, shout out to first farmer who pointed this out to me, slow way down to speed up. When we slow water down with berms, you know, running it through a field, the more we slow it down, the faster it infiltrates. Mm-hmm. So can you think, you know, Amalia, that, you know, that by gathering in a kind of deep way, you know, when we slow way down, the faster we infiltrate and as a kind of agent of water and sane reverence? Does that resonate?
Yes, that's the point. And, you know, you said a couple of things, slowing down to speed up. And when we stop together in a moment of silence and around a collective thought, like our love for our lake, what that creates between us is so profound, and it just ripples out. It ripples out into the waters of our own body, as we're a microcosm of this world we live in. And I think it gives us the opportunity to really experience magic and love and harmony as we just harmonize with one thing, one thought, one moment of peace can have a huge effect. So, yeah, I'm excited to see how people of Oakland, you know, we're so diverse here. We've got every walk of life, every religious background.
So, and is the music something you think water will like?
The music, yes. Yes, I think,
yes.
Harmonizing and rippling out, we're creating.
Okay, because I think Armando was saying, and we're going to have, you know, hip-hop and whatever the thing is and whatever. Armando, is the music something the water will like?
Yeah, we believe so.
else could you say?
The band is called Earth Amplified, and
there's a few different artists. We're going to be doing a soundscape. Basically, it's not particularly music. There is Earth Amplified. We'll be doing some conscious hip hop in the beginning of the event, just to draw people together. They have a water song that they'll be sharing, and then the artist Farid will be there, and Nasambu of the Mystic Nomads, and a handful of other ceremonial artists who are bringing, you know, crystal sound bowls and sacred drums. There'll be some African drummers there to help with the ceremony. And so we'll be creating these soundscapes behind the meditation, which vibrationally will unify us in a field. So we have the sound to not only drown out sort of the external sounds like traffic and noise from being in a public space, but bring us into a heart resonance so we can drop in and feel into the water. So the music itself will be in tune with the water, with the earth. That's our goal.
And Michael, you know, if we say let all natural facts be social strategy metaphors, maybe I can toss vortex and spiraling also to you as something that will be enacted like merit and also in our hearts and also, you know, forever. I love also, you know, Ally Carmen Gonzalez saying, you know, when water curves, it cleanses itself of poison, and when we imprison water into a straight line, it carries toxin. I know you've worked a lot, Michael Stocker, with vortex technology. Do you want to just bring spirals and vortex into play and tease it about how we might learn and be guided from that as strategy?
Yeah, that's... I was just flying over Los Angeles day before yesterday. And
quite a lot of straight lines.
A lot of straight lines. And, you know, the original plan for Los Angeles, Frederick Olmsted Law was conjuring up, and it was going to be based on civic centers around the water, the flowing waters. And there were a lot of rivers in Los Angeles. But as development would have it, there were people who bought land cheap outside of town, and they needed to have freeways there and roads, and they ended up channelizing the rivers. And whenever they do get water down there, it immediately drains into the ocean, and they don't take advantage of the fact. So it's actually what would have been maybe a more healthy aqueous environment. They straight-lined it, and in that straight-line idea, in nature, the most efficient way to get from point A to point B is a curve. And we have basically drawn our whole technology-based culture on the idea that the shortest distance between two points is a straight line. So if you drive that straight line, what you end up doing is having to get rid of turbulence, because nature wants to flow in vortexes. And so I was working for a while doing applied physics with Jay Harmon at PAX Scientific and their whole application of vortex technology, and seeing incredible increases in efficiency in terms of flowing air, water, heat by just inducing vortexes and letting nature and the natural flow take care of itself. So a lot of that is not driving it. It's just kind of inducing or kind of encouraging nature to do what it does best, which is be the most efficient driver and the most continuously recycled energy. And when we take advantage of that, it's really amazing what kind of efficiencies we can realize. And
So Amalia, may there be much undulating and curviness at the Lake Merritt gathering?
Absolutely, we'll be opening some vortexes for sure.
Yeah. Okay, well, there's that.
Undulating.
Undulating. Well, again, the right for rivers to have their curves, the right, you know, again, which is how, again, they metabolize poison. Metabolizing poison is such an important theme, and maybe we can all, you know, after our short break, where we're going to listen to Reggae Shark because it's so fun, but after our short break, we can think of, you know, again, the strategies of, you know, curving and metabolizing poison very up. The last, the seventh of seven, Uranus-Pluto squares, death, rebirth, you know, change or die kind of thing. May dominance go down and cooperating with nature's ingenuity rise up. It's March 16th, March 17th, which is the 17th, of course, is St. Patrick's Day. And there's this great, you could actually do this at Lake Merritt or anywhere, and all of our gatherings, I think, will do this. The wonderful story told of St. Patrick that he's invited to a dinner where he's given a cup of poisoned wine. And so he, being a kind of Mars hero, because it's Mars is emerging now, he doesn't get grumpy. He holds the wine up to the light. The poison rises to the top. He blows it off like froth on a Guinness. He quaffs the drink, commenting on it, how good it is, and toasts everyone, including those who tried to poison him, causing the elders to go, a real hero, a real initiate. So, you know, for us, we say, well, we've all been given a cup of poisoned wine. We've poisoned the wine, in fact. And so in that spirit, again, metabolizing the poison, you know, holding it up to the light, I think is a way I can see you all doing that at Lake Merritt, you know, but also at our innumerable gatherings that I'm heading out to go cavort and cahoot. We're going to take a very short break, and just in the spirit of honoring, you know, wonderful, beloved Terry Pratchett, one of my favorite humans on the planet, who died this morning with his cat on his bed on his way out. At last, Sir Terry, we must walk together, said Death. Terry took Death's arm and followed him through the doors and onto the black desert under the endless night. The end was his final tweet. But in that spirit, you know, here's Reggae Shark, because it's just so charming. Here we go.
Sharks living under the sea, a great white hammer age and white tip reefs. But the one shark discovery always leave out is the dreadlock rasta fish I'm talking about. Reggae shark, he's real. Reggae shark, him got a band with the seals. Oh, reggae shark, he don't want to arm ya. Reggae shark, he just want your gun job. Reggae shark, after dark, reggae shark come cruising. Some say reggae shark. By an evil jelly witch. Didn't have no reason, she was just a bitch. Some kids were boating and smoking a spliff. Reggae shark swam over to ask for a hit. The kids start screaming and one of them drowned. Now the sheriff and his posse gonna hunt him down. Reggae shark got no political agenda. Reggae shark, he just wants redemption. Reggae shark, and he also wants ganja. You can't light a spliff when you live underwater. One day a drug boat had to drop its load. Reggae shark come along and him ate it whole. Now he's starving like Marvin, got the munchies. Then him see the evil sheriff and all his flunkies. He put his fins in the air, said it wasn't me fault. But the sheriff set fire and the rifle shot. But it was just a shark decoy tied to a raft. Cause the reggae shark's a master of the arts and crafts.
Reggae shark,
he jumped on the boat and the sheriff fell down his throat. The townspeople cheered and said, you brought us peace. You took a bite of corruption in the town police. They threw him a huge ticker tape parade. But they know that the balance is the food chain. They gave him the key to Kingston Town. You should see the tourism he brings in now. You'll redeem yourself.
Anyway, I just find that so charming. That's Reggae Shark, the key of awesome. Welcome back, allies. We are dedicating to water this hour. We are joined by two of the organizers of Bless the Lake World Water Day, March 22nd. Again, Lake Merritt, that's Armando Davila and Amalia Karras. UnifyOakland.com. And our great ally, as though the ocean itself had put on human form and become Michael Stocker, from www.ocr.org. That we may replace human disrespect with informed reverence, you know, and dedicated honoring of water. It is, you know, it is dire and it requires everything. Experiment, yes, prayer, action, prayer leading to action, action leading to prayer, all of that. I just, you know, in beautiful, beautiful, once beautiful Aleppo, in Syria, in the oldest souk in the world, 2,500 years of continuous marketplace until now, humans. One of our friends, a native of the souk, you know, took us to the very heart of it, 2,500 years, the founding of the souk. And he said, this was the earliest form of mental healing not clinic, but mental healing, the sacred place, you know, in the Middle East. And people were healed by being here by this spring and listening to the sound of running water. It is the thing that makes humans sane. So I wanted to, you know, toss it back to everybody here. And also, Michael, what songs have you brought from the ocean that water may speak to us? What have you brought with you?
Actually, I have an some interesting sounds from the Arctic, but I was just listening through the library today, and I found the sound of ice cracking, Ooh. And it's really kind of fun. Can I pull that up?
Pull it up.
This was recorded by Mark McDonald in the Arctic, and oops, going to have another round here. The ice, what I remember being in the springtime in New York, as the ice was beginning to melt, and with the icicles falling, drips of water, and in the whole forest just sounded like an amazing orchestra of bells and chimes and just tinkling of this ice. But when you get on the rivers that are sometimes 2 feet deep, thick ice on top of it, in the wintertime, as the winter swells come, the water pushes up from underneath that ice and breaks it up, and you hear these amazing rips. It goes maybe 300 yards down the river, and it's an amazing sound. So that's just water in one of its manifestations, really beautiful sounding. And
so again, you know, and all teammates, all everyone listening, and also Armando and Amalia and Michael and myself and everything, you know, let's also keep wondering. Actually, water likes us to wonder. You know, how we can derive from water's genius and quality, again, the effective strategy whereby to be agents of its reverence and protection. I think I heard you inhale, Amalia, when Michael was mentioning fracking and going, okay, right, which we want to do. What is, again, yes, and there's Governor Brown, bless his little cuckoo heart, and his goodness too, but once fracking. So what is the organizing around informing people of that, everybody, but especially around this particular event on March 22nd at 3:30 in Oakland, 3 p.m. everywhere else in the world. Anybody want to say what the
so we have
yes, please,
our dear
Armando.
Friend we have our dear friend David Braun from Californians Against Fracking, who just was a part of the successful campaign to ban fracking in New York, who will be speaking at our event, and his organization will be tabling. And then also Laura, I can't remember how to pronounce her last name exactly, Laura Ifu, who's with 350.org East Bay or Bay Area, who will also be talking, and they'll be sharing both the stage together, talking about what fracking issues are, the permanent destruction of water for this gas, and like what the campaigns are happening all across California, and how people can get engaged in banning it here in California. So they'll both be kind of our main speakers on that subject.
What really amazing me about this fracking, the folks who are doing it have a lot of answers to the big questions, like they're saying that the fracking happens below the drinking water level. They say that they've been fracking for 60 years in California. Actually, they've been using hot water to melt tar sands down in Taft and McKittrick, but it's not the same as the high pressure fracking. What they do for the high pressure fracking is that they make water, they call it slick water. Sounds really great. And it's basically a polymer that is hydrophilic, and it's this kind of the type of lubricants, you know, water-based lubricants that you can get for various, you know, like, well, sex lubricants, for example. You know, they're very slick, very slippery, and so they put the polymers in, and then they also put a number of other different types of things in the sand. Of course, is really important. There's a sand crisis going on because of fracking right now, in terms of harvesting sand from various areas. It is put into the earth under very high pressures. It kind of blows open the shale formations, the sand props the shale open, and then they have other chemicals, and depending upon the makeup of the shale, whether it's acidic or alkali or what have you, to try to basically force oil out of the earth. And with all its crazy chemicals, it comes back up to the surface, and then they have to process what they do. I mean, they do often basically reinject a lot, but just last week in Inyo County, where Taft McKittrick is, they found hundreds of these unlined, shallow pits that they were putting all this, what they call produced water, which has all kinds of exciting stuff in it, and you know, toluene and benzene. And so there's some finger wagging going on down there, but these guys cannot seem to really get the idea that what they're doing is poisoning all of the water that we are part of here on the planet. And their excuses, you know, in the ocean, there are, you know, there's aquifers, there's water down 3,000 feet below where I'm sitting right now. That will eventually go into the ocean. There's springs, vernal springs out in the ocean that are constantly flowing with this fresh water that that is part of this whole Earth water matrix. And that's where this slick water will end up at some point in time. And there's critters around those freshwater seeps that are real specific to that. And those critters will not be able to handle slick water and all the different types of substances that these guys put in the water. So they know when they're making kind of excuses and saying, oh, don't worry about it, it's below. I mean, they know it's a problem. You know, mom told them that you don't do this with water, and they continue to do so, and it's a little frightening.
Well, no, more than that, I also want to tout a really pretty great show on HBO, the new show Vice, which I thought was just sort of a humble thing. But no, it's a $4.5 billion business started by this kind of biker bearded guy, but it's really good. Last week's Friday show was on the Arctic melt, was on, again, the issue of water around the world, which we do want to fully, as informed as we can be, and again, all of next week's show with Robert Scribbler will be dedicated to that. But we gotta know. And I think also that the theme, there's a finite amount of water. There's only, that's it. The water that rains, the water that Cleopatra took a bath in, that's it. And it is amazingly profligate. It's what I've said maybe, well, I'll say it again anyway. A million years ago, 2 years ago, 3 years ago, when I was at CPAC, just because, you know, I want to know everything. But there was a guy there, and I want to bring in the oil, coal interests, and the few people who are blocking sanity, really. And this guy was saying, no EPA, no protection, no regulation, because I want to play the game that I want to play. And I go, well, that's interesting, because the essence of games is rules, you know. Limits. Rules are limits. And he's like, oh, I hadn't thought of that. I go, we live on a planet, right, where there are some limits. You know, there's only so much water. And he's like, really? Most people don't even know that. It's that's the game. And he goes, oh, I better rethink my, what did you call it, metaphor. I'm going, yes, you go do that. There is only so much. And what they did with Vice, in which they, you know, speak to the world's leading experts, you know, who are living in Antarctica, and it's going, you know, again, at 60 times the rate of the worst case scenario. And they said some things are inevitable. But they said, you know, in places like Bangladesh, and close by, which is at sea level and very flat, there's going to be 300 million human refugees mid-century, probably no matter what. And then we go, all right, and we're going to, again, you know, honor many of the things. So yes, everything gathering to be informed, to fall to our knees in a good way, you know, to be, again, informed and prayerful, apologies, you know, theater, all of that. I think also deriving, you know, well, the Tao Te Ching. Anybody here a fan of the Tao Te Ching, which is all about how to be like water as a strategy, feel free, if anybody, but I remember, you know, it's again the quality of water, the intelligence of water, nothing more powerful in nature, and nothing more gentle, but it hits an obstacle and either goes around it or just wipes it away, or underground.
I was
the last thing I want to...
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Oh, sorry. I want to toss it right back to you. But the point that Weiss was making, talking to all these people, going, there's really, there's some things that are just going to happen. And then what can we do? Again, focus of now, focus of next week's show with Robert Scribler. And they said, well, there's really just a very few people in the way of sanity. It is the oil and coal interests who don't really care. They don't really care. And the level of, mendacity and, corruption is, so in the spirit of right now, hovering directly over Berkeley right now is Mars and Uranus, the way to redefine heroism. Mars, what do we reward in Marsness? And Uranus, ingenuity, culture of reverent ingenuity. It's forming a grand trine. So team, in a not easy way, but in a joyful way, can we imagine, a renaissance of reverent ingenuity, again, kind of guided by water? Michael, is this, part of your dynamic? You're a renaissance guy.
Well, I'm going to be in about a month going to an offshore technologies conference. It's all about oil and gas, deep sea processing, and the gee whiz factor is really high. If you're an engineering geek, I'm going to be wearing my engineer drag there and kicking tires with the best of them. There is a real high gee whiz factor, and because it's so big that there's 90,000 people attend this conference. It's twice as many people who live in San Rafael, And they're all have these giant pieces of equipment, and they see things in terms of engineered problems and engineered solutions. And so the challenge is to invite them. I have a friend in the industry, and he's saying, well, you basically, these people don't have a clue. They don't think in this way that I need
you
to.
You need Amalia and Armando to help them undulate.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, although, these guys are definitely, they're the suit set, and you have to kind of go in and treat them with reverence, but also, let them understand that this that is serious. Our water, I wasn't about to say when we were talking about Bangladesh, well, that's Bangladesh. What about Louisiana that has basically just taken 150 names off the map, like Oyster Bay and Pelican Island, because they're no longer bays and islands. They're just water. So that state is sinking, and 30% of that state's going to be underwater by 2025. And there's refugees from that too. And what's going to happen in North Carolina, where the governor said that any development plans cannot be made in consideration of on the words you don't use are sea level rise. So okay,
right,
we'll
just pretend. And Florida has banned the term climate change from all government documents and speak. Anyway, all right, yes.
So when you get to that level of denial, it's obvious that they're aware of the problem. You can't say climate change doesn't exist, and then you can't actually use the term because you're inviting the term into the discussion, and they don't have a leg to stand on. So they're just saying that term is not invited into the discussion.
If I may jump in for a moment.
Please.
So we the people of America, right, we're all saturated in this kind of denialism. We're run thin by our needs to survive, or we're gluttonous with our abundance. But I mean, when I hear about all these scenarios happening in the future, the only thing that I think can really save us from these dire, kind of like apocalyptic sci-fi realities is by right now coming to terms with where we're at and caring for each other in a way where we just, I mean, I think the water style of this transformation can be is just a very simple recognition that the story isn't totally written yet. And we have to orient towards caring for each other by proactively addressing these issues right now and strategizing the near future to accommodate all these changes. But for most people, I feel like there's this like developmental arc of like empowerment where they're like, oh, I can't do anything. Oh, maybe I can do anything. Maybe I can do something. I really want to do something. I'm committed to do something. Oh, and then finally deciding I'm going to take a stand on these issues. And I know I've gone through this kind of arc in my belief in the possibility of the transformation in this world, the belief that I have a role in this process. And, we really, it may be cliche, but this idea that we need people to come alive in this moment in time with their own purpose, their own passion, because we can't see the ripple effects of our organizing, the ripple effects of example of a 600 events hosting meditators gathering to pray and kind of orient towards our interdependence. We can't see the benefits of that or the outcomes, but we can orient towards the problem and act where we can. We can do what we can, and we have to do what we can. I just would invite all the listeners to like really honor the despair, the sadness, the confusion, the anger that we all feel living in this society in this moment in time. It seems like it's totally out of our control, and yet we desperately want another reality on so many levels, cutting across so many different issue areas. And they're all so deeply interconnected. All of the troubles we're facing in this world today are so deeply interconnected, and thus so does our efforts to transform them.
As connected as water. Again, I'm so eager to all of us to tease sensual specificity, you know, into our words. The way we do that, you know, again, the water quality situation so dire. Especially around the facts of water, the few dementors as the impediments, and so everybody. I mean, we're all dynamic listeners. Hello. Wonderful guests, everything spiraling out. You know, it is time to assume cultural narrative lead, to be fierce and kind, to wed these things together, to say the few dementors, bless their heart, are criminal impediments to collective well-being. And in the spirit of the mythology, you know, what imaginative sentencing, right? We sentence them to, again, what the gods did in ancient Greece. Anybody who was behaving badly, any Mars that was acting selfishly and not respectful of collective well-being or the literal and symbolic waters of life, was sent to the underworld to learn knitting and weaving. So I like oil executives knitting tea cozies in the underworld. A kind of quality of imaginative sentencing, because part of the dynamic also is to be snookered into polarity is to be snookered into inadvertent servitude, to colonialism, whatever we call ourselves. So again, the fluidity of water. I want to go back to Robert Scribler just putting stuff on the table. Again, next week's guest. It is at the center of climate change crisis. You know, as we know, too much water in the form of persistent rain, rains that come all at once with seasonal rains spanning in the span of a month, a week, or a day. Too much water in the form of sea level rise that has already driven 100,000 people away from the Indus River Delta farms due to salt table rising and flooding. Too much water in Virginia already, 77,000 properties in flood-prone areas, uninsurable. You know, again, Miami, we've kind of covered. Sao Paulo, Brazil, is out of water right now. I mean, there's a lot we go, so, you know, when you say, Armando, yes, absolutely, it is time to wake up. It wants us to wake up, whatever it is. It's going, wake up, you humans. And just for the astro myth of it all, there is right this moment a grand trine in fire. It is Mars, again, the hero next to ingenuity. You know, the real hero protects life. The real hero makes unusual alliances with the spirits of water and the foxes and the wily things to outfox, you know, dementors and tyranny and, I mean, all of those things with everything that we have. So I don't know. I mean, also, you know, when I started off, Michael, and I, with Robert Scribble saying if we were to translate our scientific knowledge into the language of the ancients, yeah, I guess they would view it this way. We would say now that water has been made angry by our excess. Well, it's true. Neptune did get really mad at Ulysses and is now moving about in our world with increasing fury. Do you think of water as furious? Michael?
You know, I always see the water as the mother of life. And, of course, the stern mother, that compassionate, loving discipline that we got from our moms when we were really kind of going the wrong direction. I don't see the furies in the same sense of mindless rage, but definitely water is quite capable of transformational fury. And just go out onto the ocean for a little bit and see how the waves, essentially, you're at their will. You really have to, even in the largest boats,
big
waves. So yeah, it's. But you know, I was also in a flood situation in my own San Geronimo Valley a number of years ago. And what was interesting about it is, It was quiet. The waters were rising. There was a little bit of, you didn't hear so much turbulence because the river that usually held the water, all that rocks and whatever were covered with water. But I realized in the situation is that unlike a fire where you can run from it, the water just rises. And you're, oh, I see, we're here right now. You can climb a tree, perhaps. But as the waters rise in its quiet way, it basically lets you know quite clearly who's boss here.
Well, big humbling forces, certainly the increasing, I guess, the fury. And, you know, I mean, Amalia, you 8 years in India, you queen. I don't know you yet, but queen of undulating. I'm going to think of you that way. But do you think of water as do you think of it as moods, having moods that, you know, mm-hmm. it can be offended, that qualities in nature can go, that's enough out of you, you humans.
Mm-hmm.
Or, you know, only it's, I mean, big mama. I mean, there's many forms of big mama. I like so many botanists are saying, you know, nature says we're going to have to either kill the humans or heal them. Viral storms, you know, and all. Let's try healing them first. So in a way, you, Armando, I mean, everybody gathering on March 22nd, wherever you be. If you're in Oakland, Lake Merritt is great at 3:30. If you're anywhere else in the world, 3 p.m. local time. I like Oakland being different that way. But that way of kind of gathering, offering, dedicating in sensual ways with tangible results, and then also this is the beginning of a whole year, right, of everyone being dedicated to learning about water and where it comes from and how to respect it more and limits and practical stuff, right?
Absolutely. You know what I'm most struck with is the denial, and the waters representing our deep emotions that we are all denying, that are just so difficult to sometimes cope with. And Armando was speaking about it earlier, and just all over the world, especially when I was in India, one thing that really struck me was just the denial of the culture. You know, their water crisis is 1,000 times worse than ours, in the sense that, you know, in major cities, they don't have water. They've totally tapped out their underground resources, their trucking in water every day just to live in these big, fancy, modern homes. And nobody seems to be bothered by it. You know, I find it really interesting that life goes on and denial goes on. And I'm just curious as to what happens. I feel like the water is asking us to recognize the deep water, the murky water, the sludge, the stuff that you know, we've just sort of buried under, and we stay on the surface. And I feel like it's an opportunity right now to dive deep, to see what we've pushed under there, and let the lotus, you know, emerge from the muck. And I think we're at a turning point, and there's actually, if we have enough consciousness shifts in the crucial hour, that maybe we have a chance of really restoring the waters, healing the waters, because it's incredible how much memory and how fast water can clear with all these different things we've learned scientifically about water's purification process. And it's just it's an interesting time to be alive, and I think the water is here to teach us and guide us.
So we're all here for the restoration of intimacy. Intimacy is Venus. Venus is Oshun, which is sweet water that flows into the big water of the ocean. We're all, you know, big mama's beings. And there is a green fire that is lighting here. We do just have the comedic marriage of Mars and Venus, you know, who give birth to harmonia, again, a willingness to cooperate with nature's guiding intelligence and go, okay, if it's, you know, it's not just us humans, thank goodness. You know, and it is a time of serendipitous synchronicity, so each time, each internal dedication does magnetize outward opportunity. May it be so. You know, thank you all for your wonderful work, Amalia Karras and Armando Davila, and also, of course, always Michael Stocker, right? What wonderful at OCR.org. I'm Caroline Casey. You can join with me March 16th, Monday, with Daniel Gemario on phone, web, or audio. You can go to Coyote Network News. KPFAnews.com for all the events. Next week I'll be hosting Robert Scribbler, deep climate crisis and water. March 20th, Open Secret. March 21st, Commonweal. March 26th, something else. March 28th and 29th in Santa Cruz. Woof, woof, woof. Thank you, team. And thanks always to Erica Bridgman and Alex Drewinskis in Washington, D.C. Woof.
Another community-powered announcement from KPFA.
The Women's Therapy Center invites you to a night full of laughs at their stand-up comedy benefit featuring Vijay Nathan on Friday, March 13th at 7 p.m. at the David Brower Center in Berkeley. Proceeds will benefit the Women's Therapy Center, a local nonprofit which provides mental health services to low-income women, couples, and the LGBT community. The David Brower Center is located at 2150 Alston Way in Berkeley. For tickets and more information, visit www.womenstherapy.org or call 510-524-4822. Again, that's 510-524-4822.
She was born in old man's land far across the sea.
And you are listening to 94.1 KPFA in Berkeley, 89.3 KPFB in Berkeley, 88.1 KFCF in Fresno, and online at kpfa.org.